This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 22nd of August 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 22nd of August, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Excuse me. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: sex abuse claims rise, police launch murder probe after car blaze, and new Silver Hill plan submitted to council. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Sex abuse claims rise. A Winchester sex abuse counselling centre has reported a 20% rise in demand for its services following Operation Yew Tree. The Rape and Sexual Abuse Counselling Service, RASAC, reported calls had increased by a fifth following the string of high-profile court cases that have hit the headlines, including those of Jimmy Savile and Rolf Harris. The City Road-based centre said it has been forced to launch two new hotlines to deal with the rise and seek more volunteers. Manager Alison Noel said, "Recent publicity surrounding this investigation, Operation Yew Tree, has had a definite impact, with a 20% increase in the demand for counselling services across the country. Our service in Hampshire has seen a similar increase, and we've been shocked to find that 94% of our clients suffered their first sexual abuse as a child, and that most waited decades before seeking help, some even up to 40 years. We want people to know that they will be believed and that there is help available to help them cope and recover from their experiences. We would encourage anyone who is concerned about childhood sexual abuse, rape, sexual harassment, or any unwanted sexual encounter to phone our helpline support service. Rape and sexual abuse can happen to anyone, but are really difficult subjects to talk about. All our helpline support volunteers are highly trained in helping survivors to access the help they need. The Office for National Statistics, ONS, estimated that last year more than 400,000 women and over 70,000 men said they had been victim of a sexual offence and that more than 90% knew the perpetrator. Only 15% of female victims of the most serious sexual offences said they had reported the incident to the police. Ms. Noel added, "We felt this gave us an opportunity to change the helpline numbers to ones that are more memorable to encourage more to come forward for help. We are also looking to increase funding opportunities to ensure we are best placed to meet this increase in demand and help victims of sexual crime both cope and recover from their experiences. We're keen to work with other agencies and ensure that awareness is raised of all the help and support available. The new numbers, 01962 868 688 and 01962 864 433 are now live."
Police launch murder probe after car blaze. Detectives have launched an attempted murder probe after a fireball engulfed a car while a mum and her two children were inside. The new twist was revealed by major crime officers as a Hampshire mum, her six-year-old daughter and five-year-old son remained seriously ill in hospital. The little boy has been left fighting for his life and was said to be still in a critical condition, having suffered horrific injuries in the blaze near Hursley last week. The Hampshire Chronicle understands that it could be days, if not several weeks, before the inquiry progresses significantly, as police await the guidance of medical staff before they can carry out any interviews. But police have said the incident was not random and confirmed they are not looking for anyone in connection with the fire. The children's father is not a suspect in the ongoing investigation, and no arrests have yet been made. As reported, the five-year-old boy was pulled from the blaze thanks to the heroic actions of Alan Busemans and his son William at around 8 p.m. last Monday. A shaken Mr. Busemans a 64-year-old grandfather of three, said he managed to release the boy from the car by bravely forcing open the door of the burning vehicle. Police were this week unable to confirm where the three casualties were being treated. Detective Inspector Simon Baker from Hampshire Major Investigation Team said this is an extremely distressing incident for everyone involved. Our thoughts are with the family and friends of those who have been seriously injured, and especially trained officers are continuing to support them at this difficult time. This is now being treated as an attempted murder investigation. Our priority is to establish how this fire started. We are keeping an open mind and considering all the options at this stage, including whether the fire was started deliberately. Our inquiries so far indicate that this was not a random incident, and we are satisfied that we have identified all of those involved in the investigation. Anyone with information about the incident is asked to contact the Operation URSA team at Southampton on 101. And there's a picture of police officers and the police car at the scene of the blaze, and the road is is closed in that area. And a small picture of Alan Buseman's, who of course was the first on the scene and managed to free the five-year-old from the car.
New Silver Hill plan submitted to council. Developer Henderson has submitted its controversial planning application for the Silver Hill scheme in Winchester. London firm wants to change the £150 million scheme, granted planning permission in 2009. It proposes more shops and fewer homes, and most contentiously, no affordable housing, bus station, offices, or live work units. Henderson said the changes reflect the decision of Stagecoach, which says it no longer needs a bus station. It says it is a high-quality scheme that is an asset to Winchester, as well as being commercially deliverable. Henderson told the council that forcing it to build 100 affordable homes would have made the scheme unviable, as it would have been unable to secure funding. The new proposals give special consideration to public feedback about variations in height and frontage, the choice of local materials, facilities for public transport users, and the quality of the public realm. The developer believes that the changes to the scheme, undertaken by Allies and Morrison Architects, improves on the existing consent and will re-energise the rundown Broadway Friarsgate area. A further static public exhibition will be open soon, with details to be announced. Martin Perry, Director of Development at Henderson, said the design team has worked hard with a critical eye to ensure that the final scheme is one that we can all be proud of. The proposed refinements have responded to the key issues addressed by all stakeholders, while ensuring that the scheme is the best and most sustainable option for today's environment. Meanwhile, the initiation of site investigation and archaeology demonstrates our commitment to proceeding with the development as soon as we can. Paul Apperton, partner at Allies and Morrison Architects, said, "Winchester is a distinguished historic city. It has been a privilege to have the opportunity to work on this project for 10 years. We are proud of how the scheme repairs the damaged fabric and historic street pattern of this important site at the heart of the city." The Chronicle revealed last week a confidential City Council report into Silver Hill. The scheme is forecast to make a £15 million profit, a return on cost of some 10%. Mr. Perry declined to answer questions, including how he told a public inquiry into the CPO in 2012 that Henderson has multiple alternative funding sources, but now cannot afford to build affordable housing.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical, Chronicle comment, first person and a couple of items from Belgarum, and then we'll do announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements, and the death announcements this week are Bossingham, Joan Laura Bossingham, who died at home aged 94. Bradley, Nina Bradley, died on the 9th of August aged 90. Collins, Irene Mary Collins, née Gota, who died at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice aged 89. Finn, Derek Finn, died on the 13th of August aged 71. Fitzgerald, James Anthony Walden Fitzgerald, died on the 18th of August aged 79. Folds, Michael Kenneth Folds, died on the 15th of August aged 70. Goodchild, Mavis Jean Goodchild, died at Flowerdown Care Home aged 75. Harper, James Harper, died on the 7th of August at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital aged 78. Lawson, Robert Randolph Lawson, died on the 10th of August, aged 99. Piper, Ellen Annie Gertrude Piper, died at West Holm Nursing Home, aged 99. Smith, the Reverend Norman Smith, former vicar of St Bartholomew's at Hyde, died aged 87. And Walker, Dennis Walker of Sutton Scotney, has died aged 86. And now we move on to letters to the editor. Sorry, Christian comment. Albie, thank you.
Yes, Christian comment this week under the heading Loving Your Enemies is Not Normal comes from Roland Ream. Making enemies is inevitable. Even Jesus Christ, believed by his followers to be faultless, made enemies of those opposed to his values and practices. And they hated him all the more when he exposed the lack of truth and justice in their position. I returned from a visit to Auschwitz with a fascinating book about what makes people commit mass murder, written by a journalist who interviewed them and their survivors. His conclusion was that murder on this scale becomes possible when a distance is created between perpetrator and victim. For example, when the killing can be achieved indirectly by technology rather than by human contact. Another form of distancing is the psychological gap that can be opened up between peoples. After the First World War, the myth spread that Jews were responsible for the Russian massacre of Germans. This fed into the ideology of the need for the Aryan master race to rid itself of Semitic impurity. In a similar vein, the Japanese despised the Chinese and the Slavs loathed the Russians. It is natural to have enemies, to hate them, and see them as subhuman. One of the best survival mechanisms of prisoners was to see their captors as beasts rather than people like them. When put on trial for his life, the Auschwitz camp commandant's only regret was that he hadn't spent enough time with his family. Love your enemies is in many respects ridiculous advice. How can we love those who've been bombing United Nations refugees in Gaza? It is far easier to hate them. Not just individuals, but a people. And this is exactly what has been happening across Europe with a new wave of violence against Jews, who are once again seen as subhuman. Loving the enemy does not mean condoning wicked acts, but it does warn us against treating the perpetrators of these acts as irrational and devoid of the capacity to make rational decisions. It also means giving up the illusion that we are somehow better, less prone to be governed by our histories, circumstances, and survival instincts when we make our own choices. How can we survive if we do not distance ourselves from our enemies? Jesus' fate reminds us that we can't always, but at least we will be saved from being among those who crucify others, satisfied in our own eyes that we are blameless.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So, first, Nikki, thank you.
And from Karen McCleary, Kingsworthy. Do the numbers stack up? Sir, over the past few weeks, there have been many newspaper columns devoted to plans for new housing estates around Winchester, as well as letters emphasising the need for social housing. Do the housing figures really stack up? Here in Kingsworthy, in February of this year, a 25-house development was completed and has been advertised as being available as affordable social housing and shared ownership. If the need for these types of housing schemes are so great, why do three houses, i.e. 12%, of the total still lie empty 6 months after being ready for occupation? The builders of the site on Topfield, Drew Smith, say they will apply to build another 50 houses adjacent to the current development, with a significant proportion being for social housing. With new houses still waiting for owners, can this destruction of yet more English countryside really be justified? Karen McCleary, Mrs. Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And M. Bidwell of Clifton Road, Winchester, says, remember them at election time. Sir, those who work so hard to raise concern and motivate protest about the Silver Hill project will know whether anything further can be achieved now and how to achieve it. There are doubtless other avenues to explore. In the meanwhile, the rest of us, the cannon fodder of local democracy, might do well to reflect on what has happened and why. In the face of organised, informed and highly vocal dissent, our elected representatives have given the clearest possible impression that they are totally indifferent to public opinion. No adequate response has been made either to broad criticism of the project or to constructive proposals to improve it. They have, in effect, behaved as though they were the powerless agents of the developer, merely parroting his arguments for the project and its degraded social policy content. Elected representatives do not lightly put themselves in such an electorally vulnerable position. It is fair to assume from this that they really had painted themselves into a corner. This is not what we expect from the people we elect. What the rest of us need to consider, then, is how to prevent such people, be they corroded through weakness and or compromised by conflicted agendas, getting into positions so damaging to the public interest. One councillor alone has stood his ground against this unsavoury tide. All credit to him. Let us bear this in mind next time we have to choose our representatives. M. Bidwell, Clifton Road, Winchester.
And this letter comes from Nicholas Goss of Hatherley Road, Winchester, under the heading Colleges Creeping Development. Sir, resident neighbours of Peter Simmons College are again faced with an application to convert temporary classrooms for permanent use close to the southern boundary with Hatherley Road. In a letter to the Chronicle on April the 4th, 2012, it was pointed out that the planning granted for the demolition of a former armoury used as a storeroom and its replacement with a much larger permanent double classroom was given in complete contradiction to the previous planning refusal for the building of the Falklands Lodge on the grounds that it was too close to neighbouring residents. It is hoped in this new application that planning will not agree to allow their previously contradictory ruling to be repeated, allowing the continuation of this creeping development. Also, that the college will be obliged to submit a clear plan on its future expansion. The college must find the means to accommodate increasing student numbers without destroying the green buffer zone that makes such an important contribution to the coexistence of an increasingly busy campus in terms of noise levels and sheer pedestrian numbers at the heart of a residential area.
And this from Mrs. Wendy Lane, Winchester. A catastrophic mistake. Sir, we are completely in support of Kim Gottlieb's decision to pursue through the courts the council's latest steamroller decision regarding housing in the proposed Silver Hill development. One has to query why it was necessary to hold the meeting to sanction Henderson's latest proposed changes at a time when so few were able to attend. This inevitably raises questions of transparency, however justified. To the residents of Winchester, the prime focus of the council appears to be one of maximising profits, primarily for Henderson, but presumably also for the city coffers. This should, of course, be balanced with providing a development that is in keeping with such a historic city that what the citizens actually want and which will enhance the reputation of Winchester. To this end, the important factors should now be 1. To lower the height of the proposed development to a maximum of 4 stories. 2. To ensure its design properly reflects the character of the city. 3. To incorporate features that are important to the citizens, such as a proper bus station and affordable housing. 4. To include an indoor market, since the current one is being demolished. What we do not need are additional retail outlets to the extent proposed, which concept is out of step with the times, takes no cognizance of the retail situation throughout the rest of the city, and uses space which could have been allocated to points 3 and 4 above, to the benefit of Winchester residents. The sole beneficiary of the proposed changes would appear to be the developer. The residents are getting very tired of saying this to our councillors, who appear to show a total lack of regard for our views. We can only ask them yet again to please listen before we are faced with a mistake of catastrophic and proportions for which they and they alone will bear responsibility. And that from Mrs. Wendy Lane, St. Cross Road, Winchester.
Mike Vokes of Hocombe Drive, Chandler's Ford, says Bar End Centre, a centre idea, seems attractive, and there is an artist's impression of how the sports centre could look. So the report in your edition of August the 7th regarding new sports facilities fit for the future in Winchester makes refreshing reading. The idea of citing any development at Bar End would appear attractive, as this area offers easy access for the wider community of Hampshire and not just citizens of Winchester. My personal interest is in the provision of a 50-metre swimming pool, and this desire has been addressed. The nearest 50-metre pools to Winchester are at Aldershot, where the pool is occupied extensively by the military, and at Portsmouth. Most new 50-metre pools that I've visited in recent times are located on the periphery of towns, and all very well supported by a wide range of the public, not just specialist swimmers. Mike Vokes, Hocombe Drive, Chandler's Ford.
Now a letter from Chris and Natalie Carpenter of Ulsford. Take a flight next time, George. Sir, we were dismayed to read George Hayter's take on his highway robbery on the road to Las Vegas. First person, August the 14th. We have travelled extensively by road across the USA and to date have found it an immensely pleasurable experience. Wide roads, spectacular scenery, wildlife, polite drivers, clean comfort stops, and oh yes, those national parks. How can Mr. Hayter take exception to contributing to the Parks Fund to the modest sum of $25 to save himself a detour of 84 miles and have the bonus of experiencing the glorious scenery in a small section of Zion National Park? Very often the entrance fee covers you for many hours and sometimes days of entry to the parks. We suspect that they no more want people to be just using them as a rat run than he wanted to be there. The National Park Service have been safeguarding the National Park since 1916, This covers more than 400 places, employs 28,000 people, and has millions of objects in museum collections. Apart from education programmes, 27,000 historic structures and millions of visitors every year. If there is anything that gives British tourists a bad press when abroad, it's this type of petty complaining and ignorance. We can assure Mr. Hayter that his complaint and this reply will most certainly be received by the National Park Service. They have an excellent website with all contact details. We guess Mr. Hayter could no more be bothered to log into that site than he could to embrace the lucky chance that took him into Zion, with its tortuous bends and sun drivers who slowed to admire the scenery. Damn right they did. They paid $25 to do so. Take a flight next time, Mr. Hayter, and enjoy all that your $25 will buy you in Vegas.
Okay, well, that concludes the letters. And now we move on to historical items. We're going back 200 years.
August 22, 1814. Amazing gesture by philanthropic James Webb. The philanthropic James Webb Esquire quitted Swansea on Sunday evening last after displaying a degree of active benevolence almost incredible. He completely clothed about 250 boys residing in the town and neighbourhood at an expense of £530.10, and most of them received likewise small sums of money. To many distressed families and individuals, he gave from £1 to £20 each. To the two Lancasterian schools, he contributed £10 each. He left £50 with the Reverend Mr. Oldersworth to be distributed among the poor of Oystermouth.
There's a couple of items from 1914, 100 years ago, August the 22nd. What is believed to be the first letter from a soldier serving with the British Expeditionary Force was received on Tuesday by the friends of a lance corporal at the front. Since we landed here, our march has been a triumphant one. Everywhere the people received us with demonstrations of joy. When off duty, we are taken possession of by the townspeople and the French soldiers and fêted as though we had been lifelong friends. It is not uncommon to see British and French soldiers walking along the streets arm in arm, and the shopkeepers refuse to take money from our men. And the second item is a letter. Sir, may I, through the agency of your columns, ask whether it is necessary, owing to the fact of our being engaged in war and our country likely to have the number of its population considerably reduced, that the speed of motorists both in and without the town should be increased so as to incur the risk of further adding to the death rate of 1914. Englishmen bear the reputation among foreign nations of being remarkably cool in the face of stirring events. It is a pity if the men left behind in the country are going to allow this reputation to become tarnished.
And now from 50 years ago, August the 15th, 1964. Two items, and the first comes under the heading Nighttime Fence Cutter in the Forest. A nocturnal wrecker is at work at Holbury, armed with a pair of wire cutters. He's determined to destroy the effectuality of the New Forest perimeter fencing scheme. He works under cover of darkness, cutting in as many as four places in one night the wire fence dividing the Gunsight Caravan Park and private lands from the forest. And no sooner is the damage repaired than he's at work again. The destruction of the boundary is not his only aim, for his apparent purpose in cutting the wire is to let the forest ponies out onto the lethal Fawley-Totten bypass, where they and the motorists come into tragic collision. And a second item. On Sunday, Bishop Swaltham extended a very friendly welcome to the seven young Russian youth leaders who are visiting this country on a mission of friendship and to learn of the British way of life. The visitors, four young men and three young ladies, were met at Winchester Station and conveyed to Bishop Swaltham, where they are staying for a week as the guests of the Bishop Waltham Youth Club for lunch.
And a couple of items from 25 years ago, August the 25th, 1989. A Winchester pub has a ghost that is not only mischievous, it's a thief and has taken more than £500 from a locked safe. The safe is in the cellar at the Rising Sun in Bridge Street and is fully guarded by an infrared security system. Manager Paul Platten said, "We have only been here for 5 months, so he's averaging £100 a month. It's got beyond a joke. There's no way a human could have got into the safe without setting off the alarm. And each time the safe lock had not been tampered with." And the second item, the high number of stray dogs in Winchester is becoming a big problem for the city's police station, which only has one kennel in which to house the lost or unwanted pets. By law, the police are required to keep a stray for 7 days before it is humanely destroyed. But in Winchester, the situation has become virtually impossible, with as many as 3 dogs a day being brought in and nowhere to put them. The lack of kenneling means that the only way to separate a dog that fights or a bitch that's in season is to chain it up in the bicycle shed. That concludes the historical items, and now we move on to Chronicle comment. Nikki, please.
Headed, giving a voice to those wronged. It is right that people who have committed crimes should fear the long arm of the law, no matter how long ago their misdemeanours were committed. It is for this reason that the publicity surrounding high-profile historic sex abuse cases under Operation Yew Tree and other initiatives is to be welcomed. Because it's not only celebrities and those in the public eye who have much to fear if they hide sordid secrets from their past. This week, it emerged that the Winchester Sex Abuse Counselling Centre has seen a 20% rise in demand for its services following Operation Yew Tree. The Rape and Sexual Abuse Counselling Service says it has been forced to launch 2 new hotlines and seek more volunteers as a result. It is good that people know they can speak out and be listened to, and that there is help available. But it is important that those in the public eye, like Sir Cliff Richard, can be confident they are not treated any differently by the police just because they are famous. Serious questions remain over the conduct of the Yorkshire and Thames Valley forces, not to mention the role of the BBC played when the singer's penthouse was raided.
Thank you. We move on to first person, Graham.
And today it is written by Judith Hennigan, and she entitles it "Reality Bites After Being Lost in a Turquoise Blue." The sea around Croatia is a luminous turquoise blue, and the blue of glossy magazines, of the pristine bays of northwest Scotland, with none of their bone-chilling iciness. So the children and I got on a plane and headed for the island of Vis. We had masks and snorkels and intended to spend as much time in the water as possible, swimming with the fishes, as my youngest used to say. On the second day, I fell against a rock and cut my leg. A man on a boat swam over with bandages so that I could limp back to town. A woman in the pharmacy led me to the local GP, who gave me 6 sturdy stitches and a tetanus shot. I didn't have my European health insurance card with me. "Just bring it in on Monday," he said. "I trust you." "I don't suppose I can swim?" I asked. He raised an eyebrow and sighed. A few days later, we took a tour of the island, a former Yugoslav military base that remained closed to foreigners until 1989. We peered into the submarine hideout, wandered down the secret tunnels that burrowed into the hills, and climbed up to Marshal Tito's bunker. "I don't think my Tito spent much time here," said our guide. "Just propaganda." We chatted about Croatia's status as the EU's newest member, and he spoke about the Balkan War of the early 1990s, still bitter about the failures on all sides. Suddenly my daughter was curious. "What war? Here?" And I realised she had no knowledge of that terrible time. Indeed, my own was fading. How could that happen? She asked. How did people let that happen? Perhaps I should be less astonished by how quickly we forget. After all, there are so many disasters, so many conflicts, and it is too much to retain unless we are affected personally. Now we have embarked on 4 years of collective reflection about the First World War, though no one is left who remembers, and we must dig deep instead. I have to confess that the sight of a red poppy no longer floors me, though this is hardly the point of such a symbol. I'm not, I hope, inured to the events it represents, nor those individual tragedies throughout the last century, millions upon millions of them. And if a poppy makes a new generation ask questions, then its value is immeasurable. Towards the end of our holiday, I couldn't keep out of the sea any longer. We'd seen young Croatians dive with raw new tattoos wrapped carefully in cling film. It turned out to be the best swim I've ever had. And then when we arrived home, the news was worse than before. New wars, new refugees, old, old problems. We watched, however remotely. I wonder how much we will remember. Not everything, perhaps, but something. Will it be enough?
And now we have two items from Belgarum, please, Albie.
Yes, Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And the first item, businessman adds hole to Black Empire. The fourth outlet of a unique Winchester business is set to open next month. The Black Hole will be a 10-room bed and breakfast launched by David Nicholson on Wharf Hill next to his Black Boy pub and Black Rat restaurant. The name evokes visions of the incident in India in 1756, when 146 Britons were imprisoned in a dungeon and a reputed 123 died. Marketing experts would probably advise against using it as a name for a new business. Belgarum asked Mr. Nicholson the reason for the slightly unusual name. "Because the rooms are small and bijou," he said, with a straight face. His other branch of the Black Empire is the Black Bottle Wine Bar on Bridge Street. And there's a photograph of Mr. Nicholson, who's set to open the Black Hole Bed and Breakfast, which he's standing in front of, in Winchester next month. And a second item, dentist pedals on despite bike theft. A Winchester dentist has completed a 200-mile charity ride despite his bike being stolen. Mark Aston rode on behalf of the Alzheimer's Society as his father suffers from the condition, but the night before he was due to start, his bike was taken. After some quick thinking, the partner at City Bridge Dental Care in Bridge Street used a hired bike for the 3-day course. It took in the lakes, the Yorkshire Dales and the North Yorkshire Moors and followed some of the same terrain covered by the riders in this year's Tour de France Le Départ. Mr. Aston said, taking an unfamiliar hire bike from the Lake District to Scarborough in nearly 30 degree heat wasn't quite what I had in mind when I signed up for the crossing. I was also keen to raise money for Alzheimer's research, as my father suffers from the condition and I have seen what support he requires on a daily basis. After intense heat and heavy rain, the dentist finished the course with a cracked rib, but that hasn't put him off signing up for the 100-mile coast-to-coast triathlon in September. To donate, go to, all small case, justgiving.com/Mark-Aston2.
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements. And we start with What's On, There's only one item that we found this week, and that's a concert on Bank Holiday Monday, the 25th of August, and it's a bank holiday organ recital in Winchester Cathedral. It's at 4 p.m. It's being carried out by Adrian Lucas from Worcester. Tickets for the concert are £10 from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. So that's a Cathedral organ recital concert, 4 p.m. on Bank Holiday Monday. And the phone number is 01962 857 275. Just a reminder that the Open Site Mobile Advice Service will be at Alton Market in the High Street at Alton on Tuesday the 26th of August between 10:30 and 12:30. Lighting up time ends Friday the 22nd of August at 6:03 a.m. and begins at 8:13 p.m. And on Wednesday the 27th of August it ends at 6:10 a.m. and begins at 8:02 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording that you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
Man ran over partner as she lay on driveway. Woman 38 dies years after incident, inquest told. A coroner has criticised police for not fully investigating how a Winchester woman came to be run over by her intoxicated partner. An inquest on Tuesday heard how the serious injuries Claire Southern suffered when her partner Robert Wallace drove the front wheels of his van across her on July the 4th, 2009, contributed to her eventual death 4 years later. Gwent police said their investigations into the incident caused them to doubt the veracity of information given by Mr. Wallace. He was charged with causing grievous bodily harm with intent, but the case was eventually dropped. Hampshire coroner Graham Short said the evidence from a police reconstruction of the day Wallace ran over Miss Southern outside their Newport home had been called into question by defence legal experts. The report from Gwent Police indicates to me a less than adequate investigation, he said. Regardless of whether criminal proceedings were going to have been going ahead, it should have been possible to have the truth given the scientific evidence. The inquest heard how acclaimed florist Wallace ran over his partner in his Suzuki van on the steep zigzag driveway to the bungalow they shared in Navigation Road after an afternoon spent shopping and drinking in three pubs. He said Miss Southern had left an inn near their home in a huff, but he had failed to spot her lying in the path of his car when he returned later because of the road's gradient and the fact she was wearing brown clothing. I stopped immediately. I initially thought I'd driven over a log, he said. I saw her head and chest. I ran to the house and dialed 999. Miss Southern of Woodfield Drive, Winchester, was left seriously disabled and eventually died on June 7, 2013, of massive organ failure after contracting pneumonia. A post-mortem concluded that the injuries the 30-year-old suffered to her liver and back when she was run over contributed to her eventual death. Mr. Wallace admitted during the inquest that their two-year relationship had a history of violence, for which he had previously been cautioned by Gwent Police. He was eventually convicted of being over the drink drive limit when he ran over her, for which he lost his licence for 16 months and paid £850 in costs. Recording a narrative verdict, Mr. Short said it was hard to understand how Wallace came to run Miss Southern over, but that evidence pointed to the fact that she had already been lying down when he hit her. It's the case that Mr. Wallace says, and I have to accept, that he didn't see Claire, and this was not a deliberate act. I do believe that there was an argument. The extent of the argument, I think we will never know.
There's little change to discussions about Silver Hill. Brian to host second debate on health services. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine is set to host a meeting giving residents the chance to learn more about possible changes in hospital services. Mr. Brine will host another meeting called Ask the NHS on Saturday, September the 20th, focusing on obstetrics and maternity care. Plans for the new acute hospital covering Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke means these services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital could be affected. Mr. Bryan held a similar meeting in March, attended by around 150 people, which saw Trust Chief Executive Mary Edwards and senior clinicians outline the plans, which could go out to public consultation before the end of this year. The meeting next month will also feature Dr. Simon Struthers from the RHCH Neonatal Unit, Winchester-based obstetrician Michael Hurd, and head of midwifery Caroline Brunt. Mr. Bryan said, "I was pleased with the March meeting, but we didn't have too many young mums and dads there, which maybe was not surprising on a Thursday evening. Consequently, we didn't spend as much time discussing obstetrics and maternity as I would have liked. This session is therefore deliberately on a weekend, and I especially want constituents who are at my age and stage in life with young kids to come along."
And now for all you sports lovers out there, Harry 13 hits hole in one. The time was right for a young Winchester golfer when he scored a hole in one during a recent club competition to be rewarded with a limited edition Boss watch as recognition for the achievement. Harry Thomas, 13, scored his ace on the 182-yard par 3, 10th, at Stoneham Golf Club. And the 17 handicapper was rewarded with membership of the exclusive Boss Watches H1 Club and a specially commissioned commemorative timepiece. The luxury German brand has once again pledged to reward club golfers with an exclusive watch for every hole-in-one recorded during a club competition in 2014, after giving away £600,000 worth of limited edition mementos in 2013. And Thomas is among the latest to achieve the feat this year. The scheme is open to any golfer whose club uses Howdy Do, a free-to-use web-based social network for golfers. And anybody playing in official club competitions is eligible. Currently, more than 1,800 clubs use the website. Stephen Bryden, Commercial Director for MGS Distribution, the official licensed UK distributor for Boss Watches, said, "Congratulations to Harry on achieving golf's holy grail of a hole-in-one. To the majority of amateur golfers, recording a hole-in-one will be the most memorable thing they achieve in golf, a once-in-a-lifetime experience probably, and we want to ensure that they have much better memories than merely a dent in their bank balance after buying drinks in the clubhouse. The exclusive Boss watch is available only to golfers who record a hole-in-one. It will provide a constant reminder of the achievement and also help to ensure they're never late for a tea time again. We also hope it might add a vision of extra excitement to club competitions for golfers who may not be in with a chance of winning the event. For they know that every time they stand on the tee on a par 3, they are just one shot away from winning a stunning timepiece." In addition to the limited edition watch, Thomas is also awarded membership of the exclusive Boss Watches H1 Club, which offers its members access to exclusive benefits and merchandise. And there's a photograph of Harry looking very, very contented and happy at his achievement, dressed in his golf gear, standing on the tee.
Residents are taking action against litter. People on a Winchester estate are taking action to tidy up their area. Highcliffe Community Forum for Action has arranged monthly litter picks around their neighbourhood. The picks are held on the second Saturday of the month at 10 a.m. starting at the post box in Nelson Road. The next litter picks are on September the 13th, October the 11th and November the 8th. Grabbers, bags and high visibility tops are all provided on the day. The picking lasts an hour before retiring for refreshments at All Saints Church. Highcliffe Forum meets on the first Monday of the month at 7 p.m. in All Saints Church, Petersfield Road.
A snapshot of village life during the Great War. A snapshot of life during the Great War has gone on display in a Hampshire church. Organisers of an exhibition at St Peter and St Paul's Church say people are already travelling from far and wide to look at the artefacts documenting life 100 years ago in King's Somborne and neighbouring villages. Norman Dennison and Mary Pollock from Somborne and District Society have put the display together. Mr Dennison said, "What we tried to do is to paint a picture of village life during the Great War. We have lots of different photographs of the village as it was during the First World War, including pictures of rolls of honour, which St Peter and St Paul's was doing at the time." He added that the names of around 30 men from the village who died in the Great War appear on the community's war memorial opposite the parish church. Since the names were inscribed on the Edwin Lutyens design monument to the fallen, another 20 names were recorded, and all 50 or so men are remembered in an 80-page commemorative booklet called Somborne Remembers, The Parish and Its Servicemen in World War I. Mr Dennison added that visitors to the exhibition will be able to see various artefacts and memorabilia relating to the First World War on certain days only. These include a Princess Mary gift box, dated 1915, a copy of The Sphere, 1914-15 annual, and a Boy's Own annual from 1914-15. We've also got a trench periscope. It's quite a crude little thing, but it did the job, said Mr Dennison. The artefacts are on show every Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday afternoon, along with Saturday mornings, until the end of August. Also included in the exhibition is a special commemoration project by local schoolchildren, telling the story of aviation pioneer Sir Tommy Sopwith, who lived at Compton Manor in King's Somborne. There's also a poppy pew cushion, cloth and tablecloth made by members of Somborne Needleworkers. And there's a little picture of a table with some of the exhibits laid out, some documents, a couple of steel helmets, little bits of regalia or uniform. And there's another bigger picture of the church, St Peter's and Paul's Church. And outside it are members of the Somborne and District Society, together with the vicar, who organised the exhibition.
Firefighters were called out to a lightning strike in Winchester last Monday. A crew was sent to Elm Road, Fulford, after reports that a strike had started a fire that had spread to property. But on arrival, there was only a small fire in the open. John Hicks of nearby Haverley Road said there was a big bang, like thunder, but it sounded like an explosion.
Communities to get cash for speed guns. PCC pledges to expand Speedwatch programme. More communities will be armed with speed guns as part of an £135,000 war chest, enabling people to crack down on dangerous drivers blighting their neighbourhoods. The cash is up for grabs for people living in streets and roads across the county, empowering them to snare speeding drivers in their area. Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, Simon Hayes, has pledged to release the cash over 2 years to rapidly expand the force's community speedwatch programme across the county and the Isle of Wight. The money is being allocated to fund up to 70 new speedwatch schemes in new areas, focusing on speed prevention and education. It is nearly double the 45 speedwatch schemes already up and running. Volunteers in each task force will be provided with equipment to monitor the speed of passing traffic in approved 20-mile-an-hour and 30-mile-an-hour zones. Details of those breaking the speed limit are recorded and checked against the Police National Computer Bureau before letters are sent out to the vehicle's registered keepers. Schemes are managed by the local Safer Neighbourhoods teams, with neighbours regularly liaising with local police officers. Mr. Hayes stressed that speeding is one of the biggest priorities flagged up by residents, especially in rural areas. They can do this by volunteering and taking action on the roads of concern in their neighbourhood. Speedwatch now forms part of the constabulary response to speeding issues and is the first tier in response to the problem. It's not all about enforcement. It's about prevention, education and awareness. The funding covering the cost of equipment, training, high visibility clothing and signs is being allocated from the PCC's commissioning fund. Prospective volunteers should email speedwatch@hampshire.pnn.police.uk for more details. And we have a photograph, and we have two police women who obviously instructed them, and a large sign saying Community Speed Watch 101, which is the number people can dial, I believe. And then there are four volunteers who couldn't be more different. You have one chap in a baseball cap with a hoodie on top of that, one with a flat cap tweed, neat little beard, one wearing, I don't know what he's wearing on his head, but it looks faintly like a tea cosy. And then there is a blonde woman smiling towards thing and a sign which actually will show your speed, I believe, as you go past, probably too fast. Good luck to them. And it says residents will be encouraged to take action on the roads.
Simmons among elite for supplying Oxbridge. A Winchester sixth form college has solidified its reputation as one of the best in Britain for sending students to top universities. Peter Simmons College was one of five elite schools and colleges which sent more students to Oxford or Cambridge than 1,800 state schools put together, research by the Sutton Trust found. Peter Simmons is one of two state colleges in the top five. Department for Education figures released this year found that Peter Simmons, Westminster, Eton, St Paul's and Hills Road College sent around 260 pupils to Oxbridge in 2011-2012. A small group of schools and colleges is tightening its grip on elite university places, the Sutton Trust report said.
Lisa runs 3K in memory of daughter. She's running to help the place where her daughter felt at home. Lisa Leggett will proudly wear number one in the Naomi House 3-kilometre charity Rainbow Run in September. Her efforts will be in memory of daughter Lacey, who died at the Sutton Scotney Hospice on Valentine's Day this year of mitochondrial disease, a rare condition that causes muscle weakness and organ failure. Lisa, 31, and husband Dominic want to ensure the two-year-old's legacy lives on by raising money for good causes like the Children's Hospice. She said, "We want to raise money for charities so other families can get similar help." The couple took Lacey to hospital for pneumonia when she was 11 months old, and Lisa said it was the beginning of a downward spiral for her daughter. She said, "She was a really bright little girl. She could say her own name and the dog's name at 10 months old. But then she caught pneumonia at 11 months and we took her to hospital in Winchester. But then her lung collapsed and she was rushed to the intensive care unit at Southampton General. Her first birthday, Christmas and New Year were spent in hospital. Then when we were able to take her home, she was only here 3 weeks before we had to go back again and she was in for a further 5 weeks. We faced the difficult decision of whether to switch off her life support and no one knew what was wrong. Lacey lost the ability to eat properly and most of the movement in her arms, but her admission to Naomi House was a ray of light, according to Lisa. Lisa, of Andover, said, "It was a downward spiral, and it was not until the end of June 2013 that she was diagnosed. That is when we got involved with Naomi House. Having cooked meals, fresh clothes, and spending quality time with my child after months in hospital meant so much to us. The moment we told Lacey she was going to Naomi House, she smiled. Being there taught us how to look after Lacey outside of hospital. We went from having a perfect baby to a very poorly baby. And to have that support from the staff at Naomi House was wonderful. Had we not had that support, we would have been crushed. It's such a valuable service. After Lisa's race efforts, Dad Dominic, also 31, will be taking part in a charity skydive on September the 14th.
Villages near Winchester are about to be given a much-welcomed superfast broadband boost when a government pilot scheme is introduced. Projects worth £10 million will be rolled out across numerous parts of the country in a bid to tackle the final 5% by 2017, including Droxford, Oslebury, Lower Upham and Kirtage. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury said, "There has been a considerable amount of understandable frustration from many of my constituents that superfast broadband is presently not coming their way by 2017. Therefore, these pilot schemes are most welcome because it may mean solutions for isolated communities across, but not just Hampshire, but the whole country, where villages could get this vital boost to their rural economies sooner." He added, "The findings from these pilot schemes will be used to help decide the future approach to this problem. Although there are no guarantees about the findings, at least this announcement shows that the government is alive to the issue." The nationwide rollout programme for broadband has now reached more than 1 million homes and businesses and expected to provide a £1.5 billion boost to local economies, with 95% connected by 2017. The initiative will mean that the current UK coverage of superfast broadband is the highest of the top five European economies.
Could you be an inspiration in helping to create new native woods? The Woodland Trust is seeking volunteers to inspire people to create new native woods in Hampshire. The Trust is looking for a volunteer with experience in planning or planting new woodland to advise and support others. John Tucker, Woodland Trust Director of Woodland Creation, said, "It's vital we have volunteers to help us spread the word of the many benefits planting trees provides. The right inspirational person can provide a valuable service in advising many different groups with what species to plant and highlight the importance of planting new woodland. The Trust has an aim to double the amount of native woodland across the UK and uses the support of volunteers that naturally have a passion for protecting existing native trees and planting new woodland. Volunteers are enormously successful at building relationships with community groups, individuals, schools and landowners to plant trees and create new woodland in their area. Some of the key skills required are an ability to choose appropriate tree species and experience of planting new woodland and working with groups. In return, the Trust gives all volunteers a one-day induction so they feel fully confident in the role. Planting trees has many benefits, from creating homes for many endangered species, such as the scarce-seen dormouse and iconic birds of prey, such as barn owls, to providing clean air and beautiful respite places. In the last 3 years, the Woodland Trust has planted over 170,000 trees in Hampshire and created over 90 hectares of woodland with support from volunteers. For more information about the role or to apply, call Shona Morton on 08452 935 670. That's Shona Morton, 08452 935 670.
Night of Musical Magic raises course funds. A star of the future is one step closer to her dream after an evening of song and dance raising funds for her university studies. Imogen Johnson organised a cabaret performance of classic Broadway songs at Barton Peveril College to fund her foundation musical theatre course at Guildford School of Acting. She was joined on stage by members of Centre Stage Productions Youth Theatre for the evening of high-energy entertainment, dazzling the audience with hits from Les Misérables, Rent and Guys and Dolls. The 19-year-old said the evening had raised more than £1,000 towards her course. She said, "I'd like to thank Barton Peveril College for letting me use their hall for the night." And there's a lovely photograph of nine girls, all with long hair, all smiling, and six boys that honestly are so good-looking they could be straight from a boy band. Everyone smiling. It is the most encouraging photograph, and I wish them luck.
A winemaker near Winchester has been awarded Winemaker of the Year at this year's New Forest Show. Emma Rice, head winemaker at Hattingley Valley, was presented the award, adding to the vineyard's list of success stories so far. Its first release, the 2011 Sparkling Rosé, was awarded gold at the 2014 Decanter World Wine Awards, which was followed with gold awards at the UKVA's Wine of the Year competition. Ms. Rice said, "This is now a dynamic and vibrant industry with many opportunities for young winemakers. The future is bright for English wines and Hattingley Valley wines in particular. We're being highlighted more and more by the wine trade press as the place to look for high quality sparkling wine. We want to continue making award-winning wines that we are proud to call English and sell them not only to the domestic market, but take the message across the world. Hampshire in particular is the newest frontier in vineyard establishment and is seeing huge growth in volume as well as quality." And there is a picture of Josh Foster and Emma Rice of Hattingley Valley. She's bearing the award, the trophy, and the certificate, Winemaker of the Year Award. And Josh Foster is holding what is obviously a unopened bottle of the award-winning sparkling wine, and they're in front of their display counter exhibition, presumably at the New Forest Show.
Project cuts number of abuse re-offenders. A pioneering project led by Hampshire Constabulary has proved a huge success at slashing the number of men who re-offend in domestic abuse cases. Results have revealed that nearly half of men who took part in workshops, the first of their kind in the world, after receiving a caution for domestic violence, were less likely to re-offend, while 82% said the workshops had changed their attitude towards their partner. Project CARA, or Project Carer, Conditional Cautioning and Relationship Abuse, has been running in the western area of the constabulary since August 2012, with workshops provided by the Hampton Trust. The controlled experiment tracks the progress over 24 months of men, mostly first-time offenders, who receive a conditional caution for a domestic abuse offence. Some of the men were invited to attend two workshops. Initial results after the first 12 months show that of the 112 men who took part in the workshops, 46% were less likely to re-offend than those who didn't. And 92% of men who attended said that the workshop helped to address issues within their relationship. The project looks predominantly at first-time offenders involved in cases that don't warrant a prosecution charge, but still require police action, giving officers the opportunity to intervene to help protect the victims. Chief Superintendent Scott Chilton said, "The research conducted as part of Project Carer is victim-focused, innovative, and arguably the first of its kind in the world. First-time arrests often lead to no further action, and issuing a simple caution doesn't provide the breathing space the couple needs to reflect on the situation. The workshops, on the other hand, address the causes of an offender's violent behaviour, rather than the symptoms, with the aim of preventing that violence escalating into something more serious. There is much we can learn from Project Carer, and I will be looking now at how the scheme can be used on a wider scale.
Top chefs cruise in to teach skills. A new cookery school is set to be opened by a former Winchester chef on board one of Britain's largest cruise ships. James Martin, who was head chef at Hotel du Vin from the age of 22 in the 1990s, will run a series of cookery clubs during September next year aboard the Britannia. The clubs will have 24 state-of-the-art food stations and masterclasses from such celebrity chefs as Marco Pierre White, Atul Kochkahar, and patissier Eric Lanlard. Rob Cottram, resident chef and manager of the cookery club, said, "Many of the classes will reflect the ports of call, so passengers can go to local markets, vineyards, and see speciality producers in the morning before an afternoon learning how to use wonderful Mediterranean, European, and Caribbean ingredients, herbs, and spices to create exciting dishes they can recreate at home." P&O Cruise Marketing Director Christopher Edgington said, "Whether you are a complete beginner, a competent home cook, or simply have a passion for food, the cookery club will add a whole new dimension to the holiday experience."
There's someone up for an award in a very different area of work. A caregiver from Hampshire has been rewarded for her hard work in the community. Yvonne Reed always puts the needs of others before her own. Now, the 62-year-old from Eastleigh is a regional finalist for the Caregiver of the Year award. She's worked for Home Instead for 2 years, and thanks to her colleagues' domination, Yvonne has made it into the final 12 to win the National Home Instead Senior Care Award. Home Instead owner Louisa Castle said, "As well as her busy role as caregiver, Yvonne is a mother and a grandmother with a husband to care for at home, and she still manages to volunteer. Yvonne knows the dates of all her clients' birthdays and regularly encourages them to take trips out with her. The way in which she's built friendships with her clients shows just how much she truly cares, and this inspires others. The award winner will be announced in November." And there is a picture of Yvonne presented with her regional finalist award, flanked by two people, whether they're colleagues or husband or the homeowner, Home Instead owner, I don't know, but they all look extremely happy with her, and good luck to her in November.
And now, legal action started against restaurant. Legal action is being taken against a restaurant after dozens of diners were struck down by the potentially lethal sickness bug Salmonella. The Real China in Eastleigh's Swan Centre closed voluntarily on the 24th of July after more than 30 diners, including a three-year-old, fell ill after eating there. And the outbreak is now part of a national investigation by Public Health England into 156 cases of Salmonella nationwide. Eastleigh Borough Council's environmental health team has also launched an investigation and has received more than 70 complaints, with 32 confirmed cases of Salmonella. Now, lawyers have been called in by diners struck down by the potentially life-threatening bacteria. The victims have asked law firms to help uncover the source of their illness and gain justice for the problems they have suffered after eating at the restaurant. Public health lawyer Amandeep Dhillon said, "We have seen on numerous occasions the severe impact Salmonella can have on the victims in the short and longer term, as it can often lead to the development of long-standing health conditions from which they may never fully recover." Public Health England is investigating 55 cases in Hampshire, including 32 at the Real China, although it would not break down the location of the other incidents. The investigation stretches as far as London, the West Midlands, Cheshire and Merseyside. It said, cases occurred in isolated clusters over several months, but they could potentially be linked to a single food source. Management at The Real China have carried out a thorough deep clean at the premises and have reviewed their working practices. Eastleigh Borough Council said that there is no longer a significant health risk and the restaurant reopened on the 31st of July. We are now building a case against the restaurant but would appeal for anyone who suspects they too had salmonella poisoning as a result of eating at the restaurant to contact me. And there's a photograph of the front doors closed of the Real China Oriental restaurant in Eastleigh. And beside the photograph, there reads, "Bosses at the Real China in Eastleigh have carried out a deep clean of the premises, which reopened on the 31st of July after diners were struck down by salmonella."
Young voices unite in perfect harmony. Sansara Choir at Winchester College Chapel. A new choir that brings youngsters together from across Hampshire is gearing up for its next big performance in September. Created by many former Winchester Cathedral and College Chapel choristers and choristers, Sansara gives singers from across the county the chance to perform together during the summer holidays. One of the organisers, Jack Butterworth, said, "We founded Sansara to bring together young, talented singers to sing together in a relaxed, friendly, yet musically ambitious setting during school and university holidays. Many of our singers are former boy or girl choristers from choral foundations such as Winchester and Salisbury Cathedrals, singers who have gone on to sing in some of the county's best student choirs. The country's best student choirs. However, there was nowhere for us to sing and perform together. The choir has no single director, giving young conductors the chance to direct a group of like-minded singers in a professional setting. Their debut was in December 2013, and in March of this year, the group performed an ambitious programme at Long Parish and Stockbridge, including Parry's Songs of Farewell. On September the 6th, they take their latest performance to Winchester College Chapel, including music from local composers." Jack said, "It's also something of a homecoming for us. The event is in aid of Winchester College's Q Appeal, which provides funds for young singers aged 6 to 8 to sing in Winchester College Chapel and tap into the wonderful musical education that brings. It's a big event for us." The concert is based around themes of journeying and homecoming, including Michael Tippett's Five Negro Spirituals as its centrepiece. Tickets cost £10 per adult and £7 for under 16s. To book, call 01962 621 266. That's 621 266. Or you can buy tickets on the door. And again, that concert is on September the 6th. And the performance starts at 7:30 p.m.
And we're into awards and rewards and striving. This is Winchester Cycle Fest 2014 and Criterium. This is a word I'm not familiar with. Thousands of people got on their bikes and headed to Winchester last Sunday as part of the 2014 Cycle Fest and Criterium. Cyclists riding mountain bikes, BMXs and more weaved their way through crowds in the Broadway for the Family Cycle Fest. Spectators and riders could watch a stunt bike display, race down a mountain track, have their mechanics checked by cycle therapist Dr. Bike, and even use pedal power to blend their own smoothies. Local cycle clubs chatted with riders, while police provided ultraviolet pens for safe cyclists to mark their bikes in case of theft. The Cycle Fest was organised by the City Council in partnership with My Journey Winchester, Pennine Events and Winchester BID. The festivities also included a family ride and corporate challenge. By 2 p.m, revellers had cleared for the serious cyclists as they got into gear for the competitive 2014 Winchester Criterium. 300 riders raced through the kilometre-long city centre course at top speed finishing in Upper High Street. Some elite races were split into two to cope with record numbers. Alex Murison, ranked 38th in the UK by British Cycling, came first in the men's elite race, while Lucy Chittenden won the women's race. Crispin Quayle, club secretary, said, "It was a great day and a perfect event for the city. It brings the crowds and shows that there's something special about Winchester." And there's four photographs, different levels of competing. There's competitors in the under 8s 10 race. I suppose that's the length of the race. With their helmets, looking very determined. And then there's the winners in the girls under 8 race. Millie Coleman, Poppy O'Brien and Rosie Moncrief, looking very jolly and holding up their hands in triumph. Then there's the under-12s, girls' winners, Amy Cantelow, Poppy Pattinson and Isabella Escalera, and again wearing very fetching T-shirts and holding up their, presumably, their awards or something. And there's the under-14 boys' winners, Connor Geddes, Ian Woods and Charlie Calvert. And there they all are, again, very happy. Obviously, a very good day.
News in brief, caught girl tied down and raped. An Oxford man tied down and raped a girl in one of a string of serious sexual attacks on her, a court has heard. A Winchester Crown Court jury was this week told how the 47-year-old assaulted his victim, who cannot be named for legal reasons, in a number of locations in the town, including in his car and a shed. Giving evidence, the youngster said that she had wept throughout Peter Burns' attacks, which had left her depressed and suicidal. "I was scared. I didn't want to sleep at night. It would drive me to the brink of insanity," she said. She said on the last occasion he shackled her, "I said he was a monster. I cried. I told him to stop. I said I hated him." Prosecuting counsel Stephen Parrish said that when Burns was arrested, police found black buckled restraints, similar to the ones described by the alleged victim, at his home. Burns, formerly of Windsor Road, Oldsford, denies three counts of rape, four of sexual assault, and one of inciting a child to engage in sexual activity. The case continues.
Club gives cancer patients a helping hand. Cancer sufferers have been given a helping hand by community fundraisers' efforts. The Lions Club of Eastleigh has handed over a £200 grant to the One Community Macmillan Solutions project. The Macmillan Solutions Service is delivered by volunteers and gives practical and emotional support to people affected by cancer. These volunteers can do everything from mowing the lawn and walking the dog to picking up shopping and simply coming in for a chat to keep you company. And there's a photograph of the president of Eastleigh Lions, Philip Speary, presenting the cheque to Jean Roberts-Jones, chief executive of One Community, at a One Community volunteer thank you event at the Hillier Gardens.
A Winchester dementia care home has raised £670 to help a nearby community centre inspire neighbourhood families with arts and library activities. Team members and families of residents living at Colton Care's St Catherine's View in Stanmore chose the Carroll Centre as their nominated charity last year. The home has staged a series of fundraising activities, including a summer fete, and invited visitors to make donations in a collection box. Jewel Heller-Dixon, head of the Carroll Centre, said, "This is a prime example of two organisations in the same community working in partnership to support others. Many of the people we work with come from vulnerable families, and as part of our help for them, it's lovely to be able to share the joy you can find from artwork and reading books."
Inquest. Retired accountant died after choking on supper. A retired Stockbridge accountant died after choking on his supper, an inquest has heard. Cyril Glover, who was known by his middle name of John, collapsed at his Trafalgar Way home on the evening of the June the 15th this year. But he died by the time the ambulance arrived at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The inquest heard how the 89-year-old suffered from eating problems and dementia, for which his carers had been advised to give him food which had been chopped up and was easy to swallow. Carer Rosemary Chalk said Mr. Glover had been on good form on the day of his death. "I patted his back and realised it was serious. I went straight to dial 999, she said. Mid-Hampshire coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of accidental death by asphyxia caused by choking on food.
Another year of great results as college students come out on top at Peter Simmons College and Barton Peveril. And what I would really like to be able to describe well to you are the photographs of these youngsters all holding up their results, smiling in the hot sun. Do you remember when it was hot? Obviously thrilled with their results and of the principal of Peter Simmons, Stephen Carville, who should be extremely proud of the achievements of their students. Despite the overall pass rate falling nationally for the first time in 30 years, students were hailed triumphant for achieving some of the best A-level results across the country. For Peter Simmons College, it was one of the most impressive years yet, with 99% of students achieving a full pass rate. Of those students, 82% had grades between A star and C, and 62% had A star to B. Principal Stephen Carville said, "They are outstanding results, and it makes us so proud when you see people crying their eyes out with joy. To achieve an A star is a tremendous amount of work, and it's a testament to the hard work the teachers have given over the last 2 years of the course. The second highest performing student at the college, with 4 A stars and 2 A's, was Rachel Walker, 18, of Anthill Close, Denmead. She studied geography, English literature and language, sociology, and an extended project, as well as general studies and history. She's going to Durham in September to read geography. Tom Hilborn, 18, of Gillingham Close, Kingsworthy, achieved 4 A stars grades in maths, further maths, physics and chemistry. He hopes to take a gap year to teach primary school children in Uganda before going to Cambridge to study natural science. He said, "My physics teacher was really inspiring. I want to give him a hug. When you're inspired, you do well." Hannah Tickle, 18, of Church Lane, Ossilbury, is off to study English with American Literature at Exeter with her A stars, 2 A's and a B in English Literature, Politics, and her extended project and History. She said, "It's been the hardest 2 years of my life. When I think of the number of panic attacks and amount of crying, anyone who even gets a C I would applaud." Results at Barton Peveril College in Eastleigh once again saw them virtually matching last year's achievements. The class of 2014 achieved a 98.1% pass rate, slightly down from last year's 98.3%, while 76% of those were A star to C grades. Principal Jonathan Prest said, "They would not have a true reflection of how the college had done until they had compared the GCSE results that students arrived with at the college to previous years." He said he was delighted, and the class of 2014 was a credit to their teachers and to their family and friends. He added that A stars had become part of the education landscape. Mr. Press said, "Results Day provides a fantastic opportunity for us to celebrate the achievements of more than 1,000 teenagers who have made 2014 yet another outstanding year for the college. High flyers this year include former King School pupil Robert Wynne, Catherine Wakelin, a former Thorndon School pupil, and Zoe Charles Ford. Each of them achieved a number of A stars in various subjects and are all off to university in September."
Gardeners have raised more than £600 for a Winchester family support charity. Mark and Jackie Porter opened their garden at the Down House in Itchinabas for tea, coffee, cakes and gardening discussions. Over 100 keen green-fingered enthusiasts attended, raising £690 for Home Start, Winchester and districts. which works with families with at least one child under five and deal with loneliness, isolation, ill health, disability, behavioural problems or other issues. Event organiser Jill Longman said, "We're so grateful to Mark and Jackie for allowing us the exclusive use of their garden. It's a joy to visit, with plenty of shady seating areas, and the garden is beautifully organised with all the essentials, like parking and even a tea room, so that guests can make the most of their visit. On August the 24th, there will be a car boot sale at Bramdean and another open garden at The Hyde in Old Orsford from 2 to 5pm on September the 14th. And there are three pictures. One is Mark Porter discussing tips about gardening, presumably, with three visitors, the ladies. And then there's Dr. John Morris sitting comfortably on a bench admiring the view and the shrubbery. And an Iginabas resident, Caroline Kirkman, who's sitting on another bench with dog Lucy.
Thank you. A couple of happy stories to end our extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.